Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is Carla Diana. Carla is a designer, author, and educator who explores the impact of future technologies through tinkering. Carla has been granted the honor of creating the 4D design program at the Cranbrook Academy of Art, a two-year master's in creative technology. She also serves as head of design for Diligent Robotics and is the co-host of the RoboPsych podcast, a bi-weekly discussion around design and the psychological impact of human-robot interaction. Hey, Carla, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing really well, and I'm super excited to be part of Cool Tools.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you.
We are very delighted to have you join us and to meet you and to hear about what you're excited by these days.
Yeah, you are a user of all sorts of cool and interesting tools. You're a fabulous maker. So let's find out what you're using. One of them is this quad hands workbench helping hands soldering third hand vise.
Yes.
What that is.
Okay. So there is a thing called a third hand that I think you guys are at least as geeky as I am, and surely more. And the third hand, is a thing that helps you when you're tinkering with electronics to hold something so that you can work with both of your hands on that thing. So it usually has an alligator clip, and then there's this system of metal bars that are held together with wing nuts, and you can adjust them. And the wing nuts are always getting loose, and it's always this anxiety provoking experience. But I love my quad hands. So the quad hands is a completely different type of third hand tool that has these four arms, and I'm looking at mine right now. It has four arms, and each of them works like the bar that I just described with the alligator clip on the end of it, except with instead of the wing nuts, it's a flexible shaft with a gooseneck. That's what they call it.
A gooseneck lamp, kind of.
Like a gooseneck lamp. And so there are four of them, and two of them are short and two of them are longer. And they have these super strong rare earth magnets at the base of them. And then there's this big orange metal base. So you can also shift the position of them. And you use the third hand to hold maybe a couple pieces of wire while you're soldering them, or you hold a component and the component gets held against the wire or a breadboard. You can just kind of lift them off the base and then plop them back where you need them, and then adjust the gooseneck so it's at the exact position that you need. And another thing I love to do with them, because it's got those super strong magnets, is sometimes I just pull them off the base altogether, and I have a table, this IKEA table with metal legs, and I'll just plop one of them on the side and it's holding apart for me.
Cool.
I love this thing.
Yeah. So you don't necessarily need that attractive orangish yellow base.
Right.
You have, and so my main question is, those little gooseneck arms, is there like, are they floppy, or is there like kind of backlash, or do they like stay rigid in position?
Yeah, they stay rigid in position. There's a little bit of there. I mean, that would be my one complaint. Sometimes it does.
Play.
If there's a little bit of play. And if something is a little, actually not, the heavy thing doesn't usually come up, but there is a little bit of play. So there's that. But it's much better than the, I'm always experiencing the wing nuts coming loose and the things kind of flopping around. So
yeah,
it's better than that.
Those original third hands, that like the Radio Shack kind, those are like terrible. They're almost...
Yeah.
And with a big magnifying glass on,
This
looks so much better.
Yeah, it's a cool tool, but it does not have a magnifying lens as part of the core kit. So I don't know. Maybe you could add
one pretty easily.
But I prefer just wearing really high powered reading glasses or something if I'm doing soldering work anyway, because those magnifying glasses to me are just almost like a barrier.
Yeah. I've never really used it very much. I like your idea of the glasses though. I need help.
Yeah.
I'm at the age where I need help.
Yeah. I need more every year. So you, okay. That looks really cool. And so we're looking at about $50 for it.
And well worth it.
Yeah. Well worth it. If you're doing any kind of soldering work, this looks like the thing to have.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. And I should mention there's a mini model with two hands. That's only $30.
Oh, yeah. I don't have that. I've ordered several. I've given these away as gifts as well.
Oh, that's a great idea.
It's a nice gift.
There is actually another version that has four handles, but they're fixed and they're on a kind of a cross rather than on a flat square.
Oh, yeah.
Table.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah. The fancy LED.
Right.
Yeah. But there's another quad hands of same brand. It's a bigger workbench and it has six arms on it.
Oh, now that's kind of deluxe.
Yeah.
That's deluxe. I have not seen that one. I've seen the one that's the cross, which is actually as a design object, also a very cool looking thing on one's desk.
Definitely. That's cool. All right. So let's take a look at your next one, the NanoLeaf interactive and programmable modular light panels.
Yes.
Ooh.
Okay, yeah.
So if you're doing work, you need some. Oh, okay. So these go on the. Oh, wow. Okay. So describe what they look like and where they go and all that.
Yeah. So these are tiles that go on the wall. I first discovered them at the big furniture fair that takes place in New York every year. And this was a company that was super small startup. They're based in Canada. And I said, what are those? It was like, where is the shiny glowing object? And the first product that I had seen of theirs are these triangular tiles. So they're these triangles and they glow LED light. So it's not good as a lamp. It's not a lamp that with task light that can throw light, but it's great for accent light, or it's great to have a glow in one side of the room. And
mood lighting.
Yeah. And it does, I mean, they're quite bright, and they have this really perfect milky dispersed light. I've obviously geeked out about these and have looked into, and I know that they have LEDs that are coming in from the side, so it's not points of light. Sometimes when you have LEDs, there are points of light. This is just beautiful milky surface. And I think the core set comes with 9. So what you can do, and the original ones were triangles. And so what you can do is you can tile the triangles together and make patterns with them. And then you put them with double stick tape on the wall. And they are full spectrum LEDs. And there's an app that comes with them. And there are these little cards that are also just kind of wonderfully elegant objects in themselves that connect one panel to the other. Like there are these slots, so you can always take them apart and rearrange them, and you can have them sort of snaking over a doorway, or you can have them spread across a wall. I think they also sell these L-shaped brackets so that you could have one that kind of snakes around a corner. But I have used them in my home before. I've used them in my office. I originally used them you program them with an app, and you can program actually animation. So you can program it so that they go from blue to red, let's say, or they flash red, and so they're actually a thing that I've been really interested in for a lot of different reasons. First, just personally, you know, for my home. And then for a lot of the work that I do, I mean, my specialty is really around designing physical products that have some kind of interactivity. And I am really particularly passionate about the way objects express themselves without having to rely on a screen. So we do that through light, sound, and movement. So the ability to program these to say, like, well, what's it like if it's flashing red? And I can, you know, when somebody walks in the room, I can let them know that there's, this is some kind of alert, or if it's just kind of a cool pulsing of blue, and you can adjust the timing, you can adjust the intensity of the light, you can adjust the color temperature of the light. And, but you know, one of the first things I did was I had it in a room that was doubling as my studio and my son's, bedroom when I had the studio, mm-hmm. and then I had a child, and then I didn't really have that studio so much anymore. when he was sleeping there, I used it a little bit for sleep training because the room didn't get great natural light. And I was trying to train him to, you know, at 7 a.m. we wake up and this is the time we go to sleep. And so what I did is I actually programmed the lights so that they had this kind of sunrise effect at 7 a.m. Yeah. And then I would go in the room and we would both point to the light. So even before it went, you know, before he was even one or really speaking, we would both point to the light and we would know, you know, he'd go, mama, mama, time to wake up. And so I love that we had this nonverbal communication between me, my son, and the object.
So my question is that, so these are kind of hexagonal shape ones and they are about the size of, I don't know, maybe a book.
Right. Probably. Or pot holder. I'm looking at a pot holder.
The idea is that you can just connect them together just by sliding them into each other on any of the six sides that they have. Is that mm-hmm. right? And then, and any one of these would be able to produce kind of like almost any color.
Yes.
All right. And so, and then you see they're programmable. So where are you programming them from? Is there an app that they have to be plugged into, or is mm-hmm. there a driver that, a box that's driving all these? And is there some limit to the number of, hexagons that you can add to it? And when you are programming, do you have to kind of indicate where it is, or are they smart enough to know that the hexagon 13 is connected to hexagon 12 mm-hmm. and 15?
Mm-hmm. Excellent questions, Kevin. So they're programmable through an app. There's the NanoLeaf app. And the ones that I've had for a long time were actually the triangular shaped ones, which are about the same scale, about the size of a pot holder. The hexagons are their newest, brand new product that has just emerged. But for the triangles, you know, you program them, you connect them together, and they're smart enough to know what configuration they're in. So when you go in the app, you just have to spin it so that, and it doesn't know what direction the first one is in, but it knows from that first one that it's connected, let's say, on the right side of the triangle or the left side of the triangle, and so forth along the chain of triangles. So it's kind of a really satisfying thing because you connect them together and it all connects through your Wi-Fi network. So in the app, you put in a code that connects to the base. Everything connects to a base. So the base knows, I guess that's really what the core of how it's orienting itself. Like the base is the first connection, and then everything connects along one of the sides of the shapes. So the more recent thing I've been using and been hoping to get more sophisticated with the programming. Like I'd love to connect it to my calendar so that my students know when I'm busy or when I'm not busy or when I'm in the office or not. And I'm also working with a composer and hoping to build these into a music sequencer for an exhibition that the 4D design program's doing. Was planned for Design Week in New York, which is in a few weeks, which will hopefully be rescheduled sometime in October. And there is an API for doing more advanced programming with the the panels, and the hexagonal panels have the ability to do capacitive sensing. So whereas the triangular ones that I had, which were the original product in the original kit, were simply outputs. They were lights and you program the pattern of the lights. The hex ones, and there are also square tiles, understand a touch, and they actually understand, they have multiple sensors in a panel. And so it understands if you swipe from the top of a panel to the bottom, I believe. So I just got my hex panels and have just started to play with the development kit and the API for programmers to get into the nitty gritty. And I'm pretty psyched about that.
Oh, great. Okay. So that's a really great thing to experiment with. It's almost like an art tool. And so you have another arty kind of tool to suggest to us, the Trivet, I think.
Yeah. So this one, you know, I love the premise of your podcast. And at first I thought, what? And I had a few things. And then I was sitting at my table and then I just looked and I thought, this is a phenomenally cool tool in the vein of the cool tools. So it's the Tic-Tac-Toe Trivet, and it's sold at the MoMA store, Museum of Modern Art. And what it is a series of silicone trivets that are in these bright colors.
And a trivet is for...
What's
a trivet?
Yeah. So a trivet is one of those things that you use on a counter or a dining room table to place a hot pot or a hot plate. And so it's typically something that it's an interesting design challenge because it could be almost any shape. It just has to suspend the pot so that it has to be something that won't conduct the heat and can suspend the pot above the surface so that you protect the surface.
Right. I use mine in an Instant Pot kind of thing so that I don't burn, like if I'm cooking chicken or fish in there.
Right. So this one is a trivet, and it's in the shape of a tic-tac-toe design, a cross hatch, you know, two lines down, two lines across, and then mm-hmm. there are X's and zeros that mm-hmm. you can move around?
Yes. So all the X's and zeros are separate pieces, and then the board is one piece with the two lines. Mm-hmm. The two lines are horizontal and two lines vertical. So from a practical point of view, it's quite useful because there are a lot of different shapes. So they're the little, like the X's and the O's are really small. So they're good for a small pot or plate. And then the board is quite large. So that's good for a larger one. Or you can kind of distribute them. So you could take three of the O's or you could take a couple of the X's. And so if you had a really long dish that was hot or something that was irregularly shaped, you could accommodate that. But then what I also love about this is that when you don't have anything going on, I leave it on my table all the time because it's just something fun and playful and it's a conversation piece. And they're, you know, this sort of silky velvety silicone. So they're quite nice to touch. And, you know, I used to work as a designer for the firm Smart Design, and we had this term that we used. It was called fiddle factor. If any folks have the OXO Good Grips mm-hmm. tools, they have those ribs on them. And the ribbing is kind of like, there's a lot of practical function to it, but there's also kind of a fiddle factor. Like you just kind of rub your hands along.
I love that term. Yeah. I'm all about the fiddle factor.
The fiddle factor, right? It serves a purpose. It seems useless, but it serves mm-hmm. a purpose. So these have kind of fiddle factor on the tabletop. And I also just have a really personal connection with this because this was designed by a woman named Alexa Forney while she was a student at the School of Visual Arts Products of Design program, where I also was a founding faculty member and used to teach. So I have big love for that program. And they did a project with MoMA where the students actually came up with designs and then MoMA produced them and distributed them and they get, and the students get a royalty. And so I just love every aspect of that project, but I adore Alexa. And this was of all the students, she was the one I was closest with. I knew her when she was a student at Drexel University and she was an intern, slash apprentice in my studio when I was working on the Leo the Maker Prince book. So we worked very, I worked her quite hard, I think she would say. So, so it's great to see. I'm just happy to see this product out in the world and, you know, that's something that's a byproduct of her creativity and imagination. So it makes me happy on many levels.
Very nice.
And that's important with tools as well as anything else in her lives, is that spark of joy.
Yes,
definitely.
Yeah.
So you have a fourth tool for us.
I do.
So tell us about this one.
Okay. So this one is the and I don't know. It has a name. I purchased it. I don't know. I think the name has significance. It's called the Mod MOD Visual Countdown 60-minute timer. And I'll describe it. So it's a desktop little timer and it has a clock face that goes from 0 to 59. And I think it's in 5-minute increments. Mm-hmm. And you dial in the time you want. Let's say, you know, I want to time out 20 minutes. So you dial in 20 minutes. And then as you put it in, this arc of red fills the face of the timer to the wedge that, you know, to the pie piece corresponding to how much time you said. So if you set it for 30 minutes, half of it would be this red ring and the rest of it would be white. And that red ring is happening mechanically. It's actually a layer that's underneath the first layer. So I love the simplicity of it. It's not like you dial it and then there's a series of LEDs that fills it up. It's actually physically revealing this ring that is underneath the white face. And then it counts down. It does so electronically and then it beeps when it's done. And it's got it's also got a silicone outer coating. It's got this outer cover. And so I've been using it a lot with my son. And, we're recording this in the midst of the pandemic when everybody is working from home and socially isolated. And I have been working alongside my 4-year-old and I'm learning the art of negotiating with a 4-year-old. I mean, I knew it before, but now like the game has been upped and I actually really am up to the challenge because I believe wholeheartedly in children working alongside their parents and learning what their parents are doing and learning about the world through that work. So I quite like some parts of this challenge. And so the timer is a core part of the negotiation process, I find. So, you know, there are things kind of like, okay, you can watch 20 more minutes of this cartoon and then it's bedtime. And so the timer, it's a little bit like what I was describing with the wake up lights, but it is a way for the two of us, you know, it takes the pressure off of me. It's not me saying that time is up. It is the object that's saying that time is, and we have both agreed to follow what the object
says. Abide
by the object.
And
right.
That little like Pac-Man-ish wedge is so appealing and such a visual like representation. I think that people who are like into the Pomodoro technique and stuff would find that useful.
Right. The advantage that it has over my standard alarm these days, which is to ask Alexa, is that you get to see the passage at a glance. You can actually, you're not just hearing the alarm, but you're seeing all the stages in between. So you have an interface for the passage of that time. Right. You know how it just lasts.
You know, every time I make tea, I set the timer, set my Alexa timer for 5 minutes. And then every time without fail, when the timer goes off, I'm like, what the hell is that?
So this is also, you know, the fact that it's portable, you could place it right in the context, like you could place it on your kitchen counter. So if you're like, oh yeah, that's the timer. Right. Then the red wedge does this thing where you can actually see it in your peripheral vision. So if you were doing Pomodoro technique, for example, you would be able to see it, but it wouldn't have to be right in front of you.
Right. So cool.
Yeah.
That's
really wonderful. And so that goes for, $27, it was like on Amazon. And you say, is it mechanical or is it electronic? I was a little confused by that.
It's electronic.
Okay. So it has battery in it?
It has a battery in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It has a double A, I think one, I don't know if it's one or two double A's, but it has a battery in it and it will beep when it's done, and it moves, and the movement, I believe, is motorized.
Okay. And if for some reason that brilliant red was not to your liking, I guess they have a blue version. I don't know why you'd want blue, but.
Well, you know, to each his own.
Yeah, exactly.
Super cool. I love that.
Yeah, really great.
That's a good gift item also.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So we have a few minutes and let's talk about what is the 4D design program that you're running at Cranbrook?
Yeah. So for those folks who may not be familiar, and Cranbrook's a very small institution, Cranbrook Academy of Art is a small graduate art academy that is for master students studying only art design and architecture. And it's very small. There are about 150 students. And Charles and Ray Eames were here. Ilya Saarinen was part of the core faculty designing the original program. So it's a place with a rich history in design and also craft. There's a metalsmithing department as well as a fiber department, a ceramics department, and several others. And
where's it based?
It's based in suburban Detroit in a town called Bloomfield Hills on a really beautiful 300-acre campus. And I was invited as one of the candidates to present a vision for the program. And what I thought that, you know, and it was really a vessel, this name, 4D design. And everyone asked me, what the heck is 4D design? And the vision that I put forth that the school decided to go with is around what I would call tangible interaction, or how we interact with everything in our physical world, be it objects or environments. And so it really is a way of thinking about one way that I think about it is smart objects. I've created a series of courses in my past around designing smart objects. So we make things smart either through embedded electronics. So we might have an electronics or robotics inside of a table that allows the table to walk across the room or make a sound. Or we are on the other end of the spectrum. We're also building a lab that does what I call mixed reality, where we're making an object smart through the use of cameras and projected imagery, so that we might project onto an object and then have that projection react to what a person does. So we're looking at everything from robotics to home appliances to we have a student who works on large scale art sculptures, light sculptures, all kinds of experiences with interacting with our physical world. And again, a lot of that's part of our palette is light, sound, and motion. And all of our students are using, I don't know how geeky our listeners are, but we're using microcontroller platforms such as Arduino and the Raspberry Pi. And so everyone is soldering electronics. So we have a few of these quad hands in our studio, and everyone is adept with using electronics and some basic coding skills.
Man, that sounds so cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And so are these, this is a master's program.
Yes, it's an MFA. It's a Master of Fine Arts. And we are welcoming, so we put together a studio. And another thing that's quite unique about Cranbrook is we don't have traditional class structures. So we bring in a lot of visiting artists to do workshops and what we call charrettes, or kind of like, you know, 3 or 4 day intensive projects. And then most of the time is spent in a studio environment where there is peer learning as well as guidance from me as the leader of the program. And so we, as the leader, I try to build a cohort that's mixed with technologists and engineers, as well as artists and designers, and they all share knowledge with one another, and they work on projects, and the main learning happens through those projects and through critique.
Do you have like a summer program for those who don't have a full 2 years?
Not yet. We don't. Not yet, but it's, you know, could be in the works.
Okay. And these days, I guess you have to work remotely. So what's that like?
It's pretty challenging because the program is so
physical.
Focused. It's yeah. So physical and it's so hands-on. But we are making it work. Students have dispersed and are in all corners of the planet. We have a fellow who's in Australia. We have a fellow who's here in Detroit. We have a couple of students from China who are here, but maybe getting back there. So it's been, you know, we've had to adjust schedules. We've had to, and what we've been doing lately is everyone's working in their own spaces, and we do critique via video. So, you know, everyone takes a video of their project ahead of time. So the silver lining there is that when you work in art and design, it's really important to be able to do what we call documenting your work, or, you know, really know how to take a great picture of it or do a really communicative video. So the students are getting practice at doing that, but it's quite challenging, and we're really sorely missing the community vibe of sharing tools with one another.
Yeah,
I'll bet.
Wow.
Tell us a little bit about the book that you wrote. It's been out a couple of years. And I love that the illustrations were actually like photos of 3D prints that you designed.
Yeah. This was the first project that I did when I broke off. I was working for a firm for many years and then decided to start my own practice. And I thought, oh, here are all these really practical projects I could do. And I want to do the most outlandish one, which I said, I want to do this project. I mean, it started out as a research project and I was interviewing folks. So it was around, I started research around 2012. And I had interviewed experts because I realized that the advent of desktop 3D printing, not 3D printers, because I knew they were around and I had been using them as a professional for some time, but desktop 3D printers that would be in people's homes and in libraries and such were going to be really revolutionary. So I was trying to figure out what the possible futures were for that, and decided to, instead of doing a paper or some kind of serious project, to put it in a children's book. And so the children's book uses a main character that is a robot that meets a woman named Carla, and she's never seen any kind of robot like that before. And so the story unfolds through their friendship, and through the friendship, she's able to describe the anatomy of the robot, and in doing so, describe how 3D printing works. So the robot has a heated nozzle for a tail, and he wears a spool of plastic on his back, and he carries around a tray. And the core premise of the book is that a lot of the illustrations are objects that are woven into the narrative. Like there's a little boy who lives on the beach in Coney Island, and he's got a slipper, and the slipper is actually a 3D printed object that is photographed and featured in the book. And at the end of the story, there is a URL to Thingiverse, and anyone can download and 3D print any of the objects of the book. So the characters are part of those objects. And then there are lots of other, there's a character that's a jewelry designer. So there's jewelry that can be printed. There's the shoe. There are these toy musical instruments, etc. So it's been a really, really satisfying project, probably my most satisfying project, because I really got to see how it traveled around the world and touched people. And, you know, my favorite story was an email I got from a library in Scotland that said, we're the first library in the UK to have a 3D printer, and we've been doing a regular program with visually impaired kids for years. And this book was an extra special experience for them because they were actually able to hold in their hands part of the story while we were telling the story.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
Because they would like 3D print out the characters and things.
Right.
Wow.
That's good. Yes. Yeah. So that kind of gave me goosebumps and made me feel like, oh, I love that this is just a thing, a project that can be out in the world and have a life of its own. And I can see what people have done with it. And, you know, all the objects are just on the cloud. And it was my chance to experiment as a designer with this totally alternative way of physically distributing objects, because as a professional designer, I was very aware of the process of warehousing and shipping products across the country and all of the wastefulness of having things in trucks. And I thought, you know, with 3D printers, could people simply have a file that lived on the cloud and then have that object? And with this project, it happened almost overnight. You know, like I launched the book and next thing I knew, there's a little sheep character that's part of the story, or sheep object, I should say, a little toy sheep. And the sheep started showing up in, you know, Japan and the Netherlands and Italy. And it was a really great way to see the experiment be realized in the world.
I love that.
And
so in the next minute or so that we have, tell us about your RoboPsych podcast and what it's about.
Yeah. So I co-host a podcast. It's bi-weekly. And it was created by a fellow named Dr. Tom Guariello, who is a PhD psychologist. And what we do every week is we have a discussion around design and the psychological impact of how we interact with robots. So I like to say it's about our hopes, fears, and wildest dreams around robots, robotics, AI. And so he comes to it, again, from this PhD psychology background, and I bring this depth of knowledge around design. And so we both bring our expertise to the table. And about, you know, most of the time we try to have guests on there. So our guests have been authors, various academics, other folks who design, who are entrepreneurs, who've been designing or creating robots or other AI tools. And we delve into, you know, questions of ethics or, questions about how robots have been changing the way we do everything in our lives, frankly. So that's the podcast.
That sounds great. Carla, this has been so much fun catching up with you and learning about the tools you use and everything that you're working on. What's the best place people can go to find out more about what you're working on?
So I have a website, and it's just carladiana.com. Mm-hmm. Diana is my last name, even though it sounds like a first name. So it's just CarladiaNa, the way that it sounds. And that's the core place. I do keep up my Instagram account. So, and it's just Carla, it's just at Carla Diana on Instagram.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Great.
Simple enough.
Well, thank you.
That sounds great.
Wish you best of luck as, we move into a place where we can kind of regather in the physical space. I think that's so essential for doing art on the long term.
It is.
I congratulate you on your creativity and making that work now. And thank you for these great tools that you suggested.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It was a lot of fun to be part of the show. Thank you.
Hey, everybody, it's Mark from the Cool Tools Podcast. I want to thank you for being a listener to Cool Tools. And I also would like to let you know about our Patreon page. If you would like to support the Cool Tools show, as well as our video channel, the website, and all the newsletters that we do, you can go to patreon.com/cooltools. That's just one word, Cool Tools, and pledge any amount you want. You could even pledge $1 a month. Every little bit helps. We have editors, we pay for transcribing costs, we pay our reviewers. Every bit of money that you contribute goes towards supporting the show. I'd like to give a shout out to our supporters of the Cool Tools Podcast. This week, I'd like to thank the following Patreon supporters: Bill Schuler, Bob Kay, Brian Pelly, Carl D. Patterson, Chad Cosby, Chris Wieland, Chris Weirstook, Craig Tooker, Dan O'Brien, Dean Putney, Danelle Cunningham, Evan Barker, Graham Medlin, Hans Riesbeck, Helen Hegedus, Jerry Kearns, Jim Lesko, Jim Spofford, John Pollock, John Burdenbaugh, Keith O., Ken Altman, Les Howard, Lauren Bast, Mock Nerd, Malton Make, Mark Goebel, Matt Gromes, Michael Douglas, Michael Jones, and Michael Pecorini. Thanks to all of you for supporting the Cool Tools Show. We really appreciate it.